And welcome to the new WHFR Journal. I am Susan Morrell, sitting in for Jay Cornick today. And here we are. It's July 31st, 2009, and my co-host is here, Ned Apigian. Welcome, Ned.
It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
Yes. And let's get your mic up there so everybody can hear you.
They didn't hear me the first time.
No. Yes, okay. And we're glad you could make it, and thank you so much for joining us. And let's see, we have a little bit of music right here, our intro to the new WHFR Journal.
Why didn't you play that first?
Join WHFR Radio as we broadcast live on August 7th, 8th, and 9th at Dearborn's Homecoming Festival 2009. The weekend event takes place at Ford Field, just north of Michigan Avenue in downtown Dearborn, and features arts and crafts, carnival rides, food and beverage vendors, free music, fireworks on Saturday and Sunday evening, and so much more. Our WHFR radio broadcast tent will again this year be set up near the carnival rides by the bridge to Ford Field, and our staff will be out meeting listeners and making new friends. Check out our traditional WHFR used CD donation tables, where you can get some really exciting music CDs, formerly in the WHFR library, for only a dollar donation each. WHFR is also proud to be sponsoring the Dearborn Outer Drive Kiwanis Club Turbo Turtle Derby, where by adopting a rubber turtle to race in the Rouge River, you can win many different prizes and help people in need. For more information on the turtle race, visit dodkiwanis.org. And for more information on the Dearborn Homecoming, visit cityofdearborn.org. We hope to see you in person August 7th through the 9th at Dearborn Homecoming 2009. Right, here we are, our intro to the new WHFR Journal, and glad you could join us. This is WHFR Dearborn, and again, I'm Susan Morrell here with Ned Apigian, and we've got a lot of news to cover here in Dearborn, local news and views, and I think Ned wants to start out, Ned, don't you, with a political topic from the Times Herald about the upcoming election.
Well, the election is how many days away? Just about three, I think, right? So that is the most current thing that people need to listen to. So here is a kind of wrap-up. By this time, you should have heard all this, but in the event that you haven't, the council primary election is going to be held this coming Tuesday. A primary election next week with participants. I don't know what the newspaper, what WINNOW means in English, but the slate is a total of 25 for city council. Candidates need to be scaled down to 14th for the November 4th election. The top 14 vote getters on Tuesday will live to fight another day in advance to the city's November general election. Incumbents are, and this is important, Thomas Tefelsky, Nancy Hubbard, Suzanne Sirianni, Robert Abraham, George Darani, Mark Shushanian, and Doug Thomas. All are seeking to retain their seats, which is usually the case. Challenging them are Joseph Aegis, David Bazzi, Terry Burke, Khalil Dahlala, Patrick D'Ambrosio, Mark Dowdy. Stephen Domkowski, Jr., Sharon Dulmaj, Rabi Hamoud, George Hart, Patrick Kiernan, Scott Marquette, Brian O'Donnell, Ali Sayed, Molly Sharp, Nancy Sewick, Hussein Sob, Adrienne Wygonik, and a write-in candidate, Kristen Taylor, who is obviously not on the ballot. Voters can choose as many as 7 candidates, but may well choose none, said the deputy clerk, Lola Isminger.
But I they can choose as many as they want, up to 7, but they can, if they want to choose just one, they can, right?
You can choose none, according to the newspaper, which is obvious. Only about 14% of registered voters are expected to cast a ballot in the primary based on past primaries, which, unfortunately, is a tragedy. That's me speaking. And as is the case in most primary elections, the incumbents likely will advance to the general. Those interested in obtaining more information about the candidates can pick up a voter's guide published by the Nonpartisan League of Women Voters in Dearborn Heights and check it out online at http://lwvddh.org. And the guide includes personal background and political ideas in the candidate's own words.
Okay, and who do you think are the favorites, Ned?
Well, the incumbents are always favorites. What I don't understand here is there are 14 people, so why do you have to only elect 7?
Well,
you should be electing 14, so the top 14 will go.
No, they don't want that many. They want to narrow it down. Narrow down the choices.
Well, then,
that's the goal.
Then the incumbents are not on the primary? Of course they are. There's 7 to be elected, and there's 14 people, 7 more allowed to run. So why do they say a vote for only 7?
Well, I guess you'll have to call up the...
That would mean there'll only be 7 people in the general, and there'd be no election. You know, there's only 7 people up, so...
Well, you're our political expert.
I don't understand.
You'll have to research that and let us know on a future show what the answer to that one is.
Beyond me.
Anyway.
I think this is a misprint.
So they can vote when? Next week?
Tuesday. Whatever that is. November 3rd?
Well, let's see. It'll be August.
August.
August 4th, won't it?
August 4th, right.
Okay.
Exactly the same date as the November election.
So remember to get out and vote, everyone who is a Dearborn resident.
Or a registered voter. You could be a Dearborn resident and not be a voter.
Well, let your voices be heard. So let's move on to the next story. The big story here in Dearborn this week has been... the Dearborn Animal Shelter and this terrible situation where they found 260 ailing or dead dogs in a house, and they were all Chihuahuas. And the man's name is Kenneth Lang Jr. He's 56 years old. He's a friendly man who took good care of his property, but authorities say the immaculate exterior of his residence hid a dark and disturbing secret. Inside, the trash was piled from floor to ceiling. Can you imagine that? I can't. But city workers, along with the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter, removed 112 ailing and Chihuahuas covered with unmentionable items from the home last week. I don't like to mention things like that on the radio. And the bodies of 151 Chihuahuas were also discovered inside several freezers in the house. It's a miracle that this man survived this experience. There was so many germs and contamination in that house. It's a miracle that he's alive. And it's a miracle that any of the dogs are alive. And he's been taken to a local hospital for observation. He had no health insurance, and he has a mental impairment that stemmed from a childhood disease. He had lived alone for years in the home with his parents, retired to Florida. And so it's a very sad kind of a story. The man is very concerned about the dogs. Obviously, he loves them. He was trying to help them. And all the dogs went to the Dearborn Animal Shelter, and they're desperately seeking donations as they continue to provide care and support to these Chihuahuas, as well as they had another major rescue a short while back. They rescued 15 kitty cats from a Dearborn residence last month. And in addition to that, they have many, many other animals waiting for adoption at the Dearborn Animal Shelter. So it's a huge problem, and there's a lot of people who've gone over there. They want to adopt, so they have to get the dogs ready. You know, they have to get the dogs in shape, and they're giving them medical examination. They're giving them treatment. And so they do a lot of things. They check their weight. They trim their nails. They give them vaccines. They deworm the dogs. They check their teeth. They give them an ear exam, and they clean their ears and give them a flea check. And so there's a lot of work that goes into just getting all these animals ready for adoption. So if you would like to donate or adopt, go to their website at dearbornanimals.org, O-R-G. And what else can they do? Adopt a dog, donate, go over, volunteer for your time. And it's very sad. This man is, we don't know what's going to happen with him, but there's a criminal investigation going on. And the potential charges, could result in felony counts of animal cruelty, which carry a maximum penalty of 4 years imprisonment. It's kind of a sad ending for this man who has mental disabilities. But these dogs are all adaptable, and they have the potential of making good pets. Go ahead, Ned.
Well, this is a big story in Dearborn. I found an article about this in the Sunday News, which was very concise about the whole thing. But the main part in it, in case we don't have time for me to continue with it, is the rules on how to adopt. I'm sure people are interested, and these are the rules. Get a pencil and paper. Anyone interested in adopting must fill out a questionnaire that asks for information about current pets in the home and whether the potential owner plans to spay or neuter the animal, number one. Number two, dog adoptions cost from $100 to $200 and include micro shipping and heartworm testing.
Microchipping.
Microchipping, that's what it is. I never saw that word before. So that's important for you to know in case you think you're going to go over there for free and pick up a dog. Number three, for adoption and donation information, visit www.dearbornanimals.com or call 313-943-2697. Now, the interesting thing about this article is that I didn't know much about all this, but this little synopsis of the whole thing pretty much puts the whole thing in perspective. And I'd like to conclude this part of the dogs with this. For those of you that are tired of hearing about it, this gives you a lot of information. The 100-plus frighten. This article was written by Dolores Flynn and Steve Pardo. So it took two people to put these eight or ten paragraphs together. The 100-plus frightened Chihuahuas rescued from squalor in the area residence are now under the watchful eye of Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter, which is working to calm and nurture the animals. They are already a shaky breed, and we are trying to put them at ease the best we can, said Sandy Bolton, spokeswoman for the shelter. Whatever circumstances that were happening where they were, it was still their home, and moving them has been a shock. They can be panicky, and we are doing our best to protect them. Kenneth Lang Jr., 56, could face criminal charges for hoarding an estimated 110 chihuahuas in his Dearborn home, including an estimated 151 dead animals that were found Friday in freezers in his basement. They were shaking, dirty, malnourished, and in various states of poor animal health, Police Chief Ronald Haddad said. The house was quite soiled and filthy, he added, requiring officials to dig through mountains of debris to get to the dogs. Staff and volunteers of the animal shelter are assessing each dog before it can be adopted. A lot of them are in pretty good shape, Bolton said. Certainly some have fleas and need to be sterilized and vaccinated, and some are doing better than others. Animal workers are trimming the dog's nails, bathing them, and examining them for worms and other ailments. The new arrivals add more work to the staff. This is important for you listeners that are caring for 380 animals already housed in a financially stressed shelter, which is seeking pet food and monetary donations, no matter how small. People are already dropping off pet food, filling out adoptions, applications, and for the shelter. Dearborn Heights resident Marcus Midas gave 4 20-pound bags of food. It's not much. It's only 4 bags, but it will feed them today. Anyway, I think this pretty well tells you what you can expect.
Well yeah, I mean, the sad part of it is this man, he has a mental impairment. And it just seems to me that he's hardly able to even take care of himself, much less a pet. So that is all I have to say. It's a very sad situation. Animal hoarding never resolves the issues for the animals or for the people. So it is sort of a psychological problem. And the man, I'm sure, needs therapy for that.
I'm sure this is not going to go away. Just because they say he has a problem, who says that? Some doctor says that?
Well, yeah.
Wasn't he institutionalized?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think his parents should have left him in a house by himself. They should have taken him alone, or he should have some type of a guardianship.
This guy will probably end up in jail.
But anyway, that article that I just reviewed was from the Press and Guide from Wednesday, July 29th. And your article
was the Detroit News, Saturday, July 26th. When I didn't know much about the details, but I thought that article put it all in perspective.
Yes, it did. So, yeah, we do have other stories. Let's move on to I have another story from the Press and Guide. Granholm has signed an agreement on high-speed rail. That's one of the stories we've been covering on a regular basis here on the new WHFR Journal. And 8 states are going to work for stimulus funds. And there's $8 billion at stake, a partnership among 8 states to work cooperatively to fund the Midwest Corridor, which will be a regional high-speed train. It's a rail plan and will connect cities throughout the region with frequent, reliable high-speed and conventional intercity rail service. And so that was created on Monday, according to Jennifer Granholm. And it's going to, not only that, in addition to providing transportation, it's going to create jobs for Michigan workers, which we need very, very badly. It's going to enhance transportation options for citizens, and it will also provide significant economic development opportunities for the communities that are involved.
Where are the cities there? You didn't mention that there's.
Well, it
to
doesn't.
Connect.
It doesn't tell the cities, but it's Michigan, Detroit, Dearborn, Chicago line. So it's 8 states. So it's the 8 states surrounding Michigan.
Wow.
It will be Indiana, Ohio, Illinois. Probably Wisconsin, I'm guessing, and I'm not sure. It doesn't tell all of the states in this article.
I saw another article pertaining to this when they were talking about the high-speed Amtrak rails that they're contemplating on doing. The one for the Midwest began in Wisconsin, Minnesota. I think it was the Twin Cities to... Chicago to Detroit. In order for it hit Ohio, it has to go to Cleveland, and then across, and you know, to Buffalo that way or to New York.
Right. So, but this one, according to this project for Detroit, Dearborn, Chicago line is what they call it.
That's not eight states. That's what
I mean. Yeah, but eight states is what it says in the headlines, but it doesn't give all of the eight states in the article. According to the American Association of Railroads, every dollar spent on investments in our nation's railroads, such as tracks, equipment, locomotives, bridges, etc., yields $3 in economic output. And additionally, each $1 billion of investment creates 20,000 jobs. So in Michigan, we need jobs, jobs, jobs. And Ned, what other articles do you have paper?
I wanted to say something about that. In the old days,
from the Times Herald.
Yeah, Alan. There used to be the New York Empire Express train that went Chicago, Detroit to New York years ago. And I think it was a New York Central line. But it went through Canada.
Oh, did it?
So that always looks like the easier route. We have another political thing that's very interesting for our Dearborn Heights residents.
And that's from, this is from what paper?
Yeah. As you said, the Times Herald.
Okay, good.
Councilman Brown, Bob Brown, it pertains to his resignation. The article is written by Patrick Pepper, the Times Herald. The Dearborn Heights City Councilman Bob Brown announced his resignation at the council's July 14th regular meeting, ending his second stint there less than 2 years after being elected. "I have fully enjoyed the last year and a half. I wish you well," he wrote in a resignation letter to the council, citing personal matters and the demands of his job as executive director of the Senior Alliance Area Agency on Aging, 1C, a Wayne County advocacy for the elderly. Brown said he no longer could fill his duties as councilman to the best of his abilities. The open seat created by Brown's absence is supposed to be filled by a person appointed by the remaining six council members. The city has been compiling ads and requesting resumes from potential candidates. The successor will fill the remainder of Brown's term, which expires December 31st, 2011. That's 2 years. Brown was elected to the council most recently in 2007, taking office in January 2008. He also served on the council from 1986 until 1996, when he was elected to the State House of Representatives. This concludes the article. The following is my comment. I believe when Bob ran for the state representative, he also had to resign from the council then, creating a vacancy. There is something here in the article that may not be 100% true. I missed going to the meeting where they discussed this. In the past, it has happened that when someone resigns from the council, as the article says, the remaining six members of the council can appoint another person. Historically, the six have never been able to agree for the last several vacancies that I can remember. And, of course, the idea that what would happen is if they appointed somebody, they would probably wait until after this year's election, which makes sense, to see who the new council is. And then in January, the new council, which could very well be the same people, the same incumbents, could win. And then in January of 2010, they would appoint somebody for the year, and then in November, 10 months later, which has happened before, the city will call a special election to fill the last year of Bob Brown's term. So unlike what this article says, they'll appoint somebody for 2 years is not what's happened. They've usually called for a special election.
Why do you think he resigned? Is it a health issue?
No, he has, as far as I'm concerned, he has a fancy political job that I don't know why he even got involved in this, that this job pays serious money, benefits. He was appointed by either the county executive and the mayors of a couple adjoining cities, one being the mayor of Dearborn.
No, but I don't understand his reason for resigning.
He's saying here that the job is too much based on his regular job is very important.
And his regular job is?
As the article says here, he is, he is the director of the Senior Alliance Area Agency on Aging 1C, a Wayne County advocacy for the elderly.
Okay, so he's very busy with that, and that's taking up all of his time.
I wouldn't say all the people. Most of the people on the council have jobs. That's not a full-time job. I think this job, unlike Dearborn pays about $17,000 a year, and there's about $7,000 additional they get paid for every meeting they go to. So that's about $24,000 a year, and they have some other benefits. Dearborn Heights Council, I think, pays $8,800. So, and aside from one, I think it's the only one that doesn't have a job, I think, is Janet Badalow. So she doesn't have a regular job. But the other six people, I believe, have jobs.
Okay,
so it's not that you could be on the council. It's a part-time job.
Okay.
So the idea that this council, they have done that in the past. I've been one of the people that have sent my resume and asked to be considered, and they will interview all the candidates. Let's say there are seven people that want to be appointed. They will interview them, and historically they've never appointed anybody.
Okay, so you think they're going to have a special election, but they're going to wait a while?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Well, we have to rely on what you think, because you are the inside political person on our staff.
That's what
here.
They've done before, because I've been one of the people that, in Dearborn Heights is different than Dearborn. In Dearborn, if somebody resigns, the last runner-up in the election gets appointed to the person's position and finishes out his term. And as I remember, Mr. Darani was appointed to fill somebody's seat. I don't know who it was. When the mayor was appointed and Mayor Guido passed away. So that's why they call him an incumbent. But Mr. Durrani, as he likes to call himself, did not win an election. He was appointed. He was a runner-up. In Dearborn Heights, they have that same kind of provision, but they don't. They have not appointed anybody.
Okay, so
and that's because the Democrats and the Republicans on the council can't agree on somebody.
Okay, thank you for that analysis. Ned,
I know what I would do if I was them.
And you would do what?
I would appoint to fill the term of any one of the four challengers that they think has the best chance to win.
Well, that's a judgment call. I mean, the runner-up is the one who should really... runner-up in the election, really.
Right. They won't do that.
To do it the fair way, the runner-up should.
Right, that's what they should do. I'm all in favor of that, but they won't do that. They won't do what I suggest either.
Yeah.
I'd appoint, if I were one of them, I'd pick one of the person I thought had the most chance to beat me as an incumbent.
Well,
take him out of the race, theoretically, and therefore the remaining three people have less chance to beat the incumbent.
Yeah, but that the special election would be the best solution, so I think that's down the road.
Oh, it is, but it will only be for a one-year term.
what can I say? It's the way the chips, let the chips fall where they may.
And it will cost the city a lot of money to run the special election. It's not for
free.
Well,
you know what happens. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morrell, sitting in for Jay Cornick, and Ned Piggin is here giving us his political analysis of local political issues today. And we're going to...
Which may not count for much.
We're going to be right back after these special announcements.
Join WHFR Radio as we broadcast live on August 7th, 8th, and 9th at Dearborn's Homecoming Festival 2009. The weekend event takes place at Ford Field, just north of Michigan Avenue in downtown Dearborn, and features arts and crafts, carnival rides, food and beverage vendors, free music, fireworks on Saturday and Sunday evening, and so much more. Our WHFR radio broadcast tent will again this year be set up near the carnival rides by the bridge to Ford Field, and our staff will be out meeting listeners and making new friends. Check out our traditional WHFR used CD donation tables, where you can get some really exciting music CDs, formerly in the WHFR library, for only a dollar donation each. WHFR is also proud to be sponsoring the Dearborn Outer Drive Kiwanis Club Turbo Turtle Derby, where by adopting a rubber turtle to race in the Rouge River, you can win many different prizes and help people in need. For more information on the turtle race, visit dodkiwanis.org. And for more information on the Dearborn Homecoming, visit cityofdearborn.org. We hope to see you in person August 7th through the 9th at Dearborn Homecoming 2009.
Okay, and we're back. And thank you for that very special message. Here, another message from Henry Ford Community College, and we're located here on the campus of Henry Ford Community College. We have our own studios here for WHFR, and here we are, the volunteer staff. And I want to turn now.
Making waves, aren't
yeah,
we?
We're making waves.
We're wave makers.
Yes, yes.
Even in Jay's absence.
Yes, that's what we're trying to do. So hopefully, if he listens to the show, it will meet with his approval. So I just want to turn to some of the news in the state. I have the Detroit Free Press here from yesterday. And one of the major concerns here in Michigan is jobs, jobs, jobs. And they have an article on the front page that the state is struggling to help out the jobless and that the unemployment office is overloaded. They can't keep up with the mounting benefit claims. They have a backlog of about 100,000 unemployment claims. And there are about 450,000 people receiving unemployment benefits. There are 600,000 new claims for unemployment benefits. You know, this year, Michigan leads unemployment at 15.2% of the, you know, high rate, and we're leading in the nation.
Doubling the average of the nation.
And the state has added 400 unemployment workers to assist with all the calls. But the problem is these people have to be trained, and it takes time to train them because there are complicated issues involved, and a lot of people challenge. They get turned down, and then they're challenged. So,
I was just going to ask you that. Just because they made application doesn't mean they qualify.
Well, right, and that's what I'm saying. There are challenges. They don't meet all
the requirements. Does it mention what the qualifications are?
Well, it talks a little bit about it, but the problem is, you know, with this high rate of unemployment that we have here in the state of Michigan, that Michigan had to borrow $2.4 billion from the federal government to cover its claims. And we are second only to California. And you know, as we all know, the California economy is going into major default. They're giving people IOUs instead of paychecks.
But the California population is five times bigger, too.
Right, but I mean, we are the number two state in terms of financial crisis. And I happened to be over at the Secretary of State's office this past week, and they're cutting their hours. In fact, they're letting those people work 4 days a week instead of five. And so that reduces their paycheck automatically, and that gives them, you know, they're giving them a part-time job automatically, and they all thought they had a full-time job.
You're talking about the Secretary of State?
Right, the Secretary of State's office, and that's what they're doing with many, many of the government workers in California and in Michigan. And guess how much time people can collect unemployment in Michigan if they qualify? Now, this is really something. 79 weeks, because there are so many extensions.
Well, first you have to finish one before you qualify
for
the second.
Right.
So you don't just get 79. You get 26 weeks. Then you get another 26 weeks.
Right.
And that's 52. And then you get 26 more, and that's 79.
Right. So it's a good thing that people are getting help. And I'm happy to hear that. And then we also have the whole economy is still in dire straits. And I just want to talk about...
Did you happen to indicate in the article what the average is, the check?
No, it doesn't talk about that.
That's an important thing. Because I read recently that they were thinking the amount paid, and I can't remember the exact amount, wasn't enough.
So well, it's never enough.
It's never enough.
It's always lower than your paycheck.
I don't think it's supposed to be equal to your paycheck.
Well, no. I mean, they want people to go back and get a job. So it's always a percentage, and it depends on how much.
But the other requirement is you have to have been employed regularly for at least a six-month period, I believe.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, they don't state it in those terms. They say, well... They give you an 18-month window, and so that's five quarters. And within those five quarters, you have to have had enough employment income in order to qualify.
It depends on how much money you made?
Well, I don't know the formula, and I can't explain it. But
I thought you just had to be employed in that 18-month period, at least for a period of six months.
No, that's not the way they calculate it. I can't explain it to people, so they have to really call and find out.
So we need to tell the people the problem so they understand.
No, but they judge it on the basis of five quarters. So five quarters, that's basically 18 months. So that's how they do there, and it's kind of a complicated analysis. But here we have an article on USA Today. And this
can I
is,
add something else to that?
Go ahead, add something.
If you're fired from your job, that excludes you. You lose the first 13 weeks.
Not necessarily. You can challenge it.
Well, you can challenge anything.
Yeah, you can challenge it.
Your employer appeals.
Yeah, but I mean, the employer doesn't always win. You have to be fired for a justified reason.
Of course. And they usually win, but they mostly win.
Well, you know, it depends. You know, some people, if you don't, you
so
gotta.
So we're adding a couple new twists, which the article doesn't talk about. And
well, no, I mean,
the
important thing that they are talking about is that there are so many people employed, unemployed in Michigan that they can't keep up with the number of claims that they're getting.
So they should send the people from the Secretary of State over there and help them with that, right? Does that make sense?
Well, that's not what they're doing. So that's a different job. They don't want. They want to keep the people from the Secretary of State over there because, as you know, anytime you go to the Secretary of State's office, there's always a line. There's always a huge line of people waiting to get in. So we have another article about the country's nationwide unemployment rate from the USA Today, Thursday, July 30th, which was yesterday. That in this current recession, older white males are finding job opportunities are fading. And it gives several examples here of men who are in their 50s. One is a quality engineer, one's an airline pilot and a supervisor, and the other one was at Owens Corning factory. And they're only in their 50s, they're white males, and they're out of a job, and they're not able to find new jobs in this economy. Apparently, employers today want younger workers for less money, And so they are the new faces of joblessness. And their older men cut loose from employment at the peak of their earning power and work experience. I mean, this is a new phenomena in recessions in America. Jobless rates for men and older women over the age of 55 are at their highest level since the Great Depression. This is according to government data. In other words, this recession has shrunk the racial gap in unemployment, largely because white men are doing so much worse than usual.
That's because they made more money than everybody else, and the idea is to cut the person that makes the most money. It's
and simple. They're spending more time between jobs, and the cocoon of protection that job experience once brought has unraveled. People are losing jobs increasingly because they're male and increasingly because they're older. And it's hit them harder. It's been concentrated, this recession's been concentrated in male-dominated fields such as construction, manufacturing, and finance. Also, the decline of unions has had an effect. And unions traditionally protected employees with seniority. So that's going away. And the loss of a job for an older worker can erase the dominant income of a middle-class family. It wipes out their savings for retirement.
Obvious.
And then they run out of health insurance when they need it most. So older men are currently believe that their age and experience is working against them, not for them.
It's not their age or their experience. It's their income. They make too much money.
Well, here's a comment. It says, gray hair is the worst thing you can have when applying for a job, says John Green, 64, a former technology manager at banks and other corporations. The economic stimulus bill has been a savior for most of the unemployed men. The stimulus law contains a little-known provision that the government can pay up to 65% of the cost of continuing with their health insurance. So, you know, that's a sad turn of events. What do you think about it?
Well, the problem is the people that are having to pay people want to pay get off the payroll people that are making more money. Just look at the auto industry, what they're doing to all those guys that the union gave them such good pay. They're paying them $50,000, $60,000 to say goodbye so they can hire somebody at $14 an hour. Now, I suppose if that same guy wanted to take his 50 or 60 and then come back for 14, it's the same thing with that pilot. He has to take a second job for less than what he was making before.
Yeah, but you would think a pilot who is a very specialized, qualified person would be able to find a job in this economy. But
yeah, well, that's because that depends on how many pilots you need. The airline industry is the one reducing their rate of pay to them. They're going under. They're joining together. It's that old theory. It's what happened.
We still have outsourcing going on, too. And a lot of people with engineering degrees are coming on board. They're from other countries, and they're willing to...
You can do it over the Internet. You call in your line, you get the Philippines. You can do engineering over the Internet with somebody in Bangladesh. So this opening up the American market and the letting dollars go where they want to do, and all you're going to do is, like, what was his name? That say you'll hear the largest sucking sound of all the jobs leaving the country.
Ross Perot.
If you want to compete with the Chinese, then you're going to have to live like a Chinaman.
Or an Indian. In India.
Right.
It's a lower standard of living.
Exactly.
So that's
what they're doing. So
that's kind of what we're getting, isn't
that's
it?
That's what the progress of the last 20 years have brought us, all this deregulation and de-jobification.
Outsourcing,
right. You remember, I remember there was a young girl, I worked at a bar one time for a friend of mine taking cover charge. This was a young, I don't know how many years ago this was. It was when the Americans won the hockey thing at the Olympics. That's a long time now.
Well,
and this young lady, somebody was talking, she says, I don't need you. She said, I got a job. I make $50,000 a year. I own a car, a truck, a recreational vehicle, and a summer cottage. That's what a person that didn't know anything that was working in a factory was making. like a young professional. Now that's all changed. The guy says, what is that going to does now? And I usually answer to people like that, unfortunately, you better fall on your knees, cross yourself several times, be thankful for those years of which you were treated so well, whether it was deserved or not, and face the new reality. You have to think of China and India now.
Yeah, but here's my question. No, I have a question. What happened to NAFTA? I thought Obama said when he became president, he was going to rewrite the rules so that there would be fair trade on NAFTA for American workers and American companies. What happened to that? It's been forgotten about.
I don't remember what he said about NAFTA.
Well, he did. That was a campaign promise, but
I wish I was the trade representative that went to Korea and to Japan, and I would say, I liberated you, I saved you, and for some silly reason, I decided to teach you, create an industrial giant here for you to compete with me and reduce me to third world status.
Well, they already know that, my dear, so you don't need to say that. But anyway,
we can't solve those problems.
That's a political issue that has been forgotten for the moment.
I'd like to be on that commission.
So we want something about health care here, don't we?
Well, right now we got a short, another political message that's important. To Dearborn residents, the Times Herald reports, that an advisory committee voted last Tuesday, to raise the pay of your city clerk, $2,030 retroactive to the beginning of the year 2009, while keeping the current pay levels for the mayor, the city council, and the council president the same. The 7-member local officials compensation committee, which meets biannually to assess elected officials' pay, filed a non-binding resolution. Each elected official now has to approve the recommendations. Currently, the mayor's salary, this in case you're wondering, here it is. The mayor's base pay is $133,133. Council members receive $14,409 plus $7,662, which is $22,000 a year for a maximum of 90 meetings. The council president receives a larger base salary, garnering $17,000, about $300,000 more than a regular council person annually, in addition to meeting pay expenses. The clerk is paid $70,525, and that's the reason they want to give the clerk another $2,000 to bring her up to $72,000. But for the first time in the 10-year history of the LOCC, the commissioners were not unanimous in their recommendations, while all were in agreement that the mayor, council, and council president's position should not see a raise. There you go. So the clerk, the commission decided needed a little more. And maybe so. I don't know how you compare that with other things, but... That's not the most important thing I want to talk about today. I wanted to get to the health plan.
Yeah, you got to get to that because we are running out of time on WHFR.
Unfortunately, time is going by. Now, listen to this. This affects everybody, and it's a lot of it. And I, here it is, Inside Dylan's Big Idea. Who's Dylan is the House Speaker, and here's what he has as an idea. He may have the right idea. These are conservative. Dylan's the Democratic leader of the House. And then the newspapers and the Republicans love his idea. The idea is may have the right idea on public employee benefits at the right time. Governor Granholm objects, but so far has offered no better pill to swallow. In effect, while I read the article, is Dylan wants to put all the public employees on the same health plan, and there's differences between them which are really scary. In other words, the average, from reading the article, before getting in the article, in case we're rushed, the average person cost for a private health insurance is about $12,000. These public employees, people that work for the state, their plans range from $16,000 to $17,000. And what Dylan's trying to do is reduce that down so it can be So you get the concept. Here's what it says. State House Speaker Andy Dillon created an uproar in Lansing across Michigan this month when he unveiled a plan to put 400,000 state, school, municipal, university workers into single health care plan, everyone from the governor to the custodian. Good thing Jay's not here. He wouldn't want to hear this. He said it could save $700 million to $900 million, saving critics doubt his plan grabbed, that doesn't make sense. His plan grabbed attention in large part because of who he is, a powerful Democratic leader taking on public employee unions. Could his plan work? Is the question. Here's the analysis by the newspaper, very short. Absolutely, questions, could this plan work? But here's the hard truth. The big savings don't come, as Dillon has suggested, from creating a huge pool of employees to give the state more negotiating leverage with insurance companies. Because 20,000, the number of people in a pool, saves little, according to a 2006 report by the National Association of State Personnel Executives. To save mega millions, you have to cut benefits. For more employees, pay more. So they make the employees pay more, Governor Jennifer Granholm said this week, that state employees don't have a gold benefit package. This is me talking now. Dillon was famous before he got into politics by buying companies with a consortium of people, reducing benefits and changing relationships with the unions to make the companies more viable. This is something he knows a lot about because that's what he did before he got into politics. Now, let's go back to the article. By looking at studies, the Free Press found that the cost of health care for state employees averages $16,000 for a family plan, about $4,000 more than workers at large Michigan companies, which I told you was 12. That's after state employees made about $300 million in concessions over the last 3 years. In other words, they've made some concessions already. So how much would be saved? The answer, this is from the Free Press, with 400,000 policyholders in the pool, if you cut the average cost by $2,000 apiece, then the various governments and schools participating would share $800 million in savings. That's a big number, a big if. Guess where the $4,000 comes from? Instead of getting a $16,000 package, you get a $12,000 one like normal people, and then you have to pick up the difference. That's what this is all about. And I'm going to go, there's a couple of comments by important people, whether to see what they say about it in general. Because as you know, right now, what are we talking about in Congress? Changing our health care plan, not to a government single-payer one, as the Republicans are telling you when you hear them all the time. 80% of the people's health care will be provided by private companies, as they are now. Obama was not foolish enough to try to change the whole system. So the 80% of those people are going to get one thing. Their premium may get a little bit lower. There'll be some guarantees that existing conditions will not be eliminated. And the other thing is that you'll be have insurance if you're out of a job. That's 80%. The 20% that don't have insurance, those are the people that are affected mostly by this. But here's what the plan says here. How do public employees benefit? Well, health insurance company for a family costs $16,000 to $17,000, as I pointed. There's the 12, there's that difference. I'm summarizing. Now, here's another thing where they're talking about state employees paying $142 a month, Blue Cross Blue Shield plan. That's about $10 less than a private sector, so they're paying $10 less on a Blue Shield plan. What about teachers? Oh, this is the school employees, about $15,000. Including dental. So school teachers are about 3,000 more than the average at 12. Michigan school employee benefits for 2006 health care plus retirement was 40% higher than the national average. This is the number. We're talking about Michigan here. I'm not reading the article. I'm just summarizing right. The high points out of it. So now, again, There's some five questions about who would benefit. Now, this is very important to us today because that's what the discussion is. I was surprised to see this in the paper. So why is Dylan pushing this?
Is this all the Free Press or is this the Times Herald?
No. This isn't the Free Press. None of this has to do with the Times Herald. To save a lot of money, eventually Dylan and his supporters say these costs are leaving fewer tax dollars to pay for the essentials, like teachers and police and programs like unemployed people and money for... So if you need money for those programs, you got to get it from someplace.
Right.
And then what he's trying to do is average down the costs for people who cost $16,000-$17,000 a person to around $12,000, which is more like the national average. Some people like to be way above it, I guess. That's what he's trying to do. Would everyone pay the same? Dylan says no. It depends on how much you're paying. If you're lower on the scale, you would pay less. Who would it affect? That's the important thing. Start with 400,000 state, local, and school university employees. Add their family members and retirees. Retirees are the key in all this problem. May top 1 million people. Dylan says private employers could eventually join the pool. Who would run the insurance plant? The state would take bids from private insurers, Dylan says. It's possible for several companies would be used. In other words, but Dylan doesn't want the government to run the program. He wants the state companies. How would it affect collective bargaining? This is another important issue for people in unions. The state would negotiate a single health plan. It would offer several options collectively with hundreds of current bargaining units. How? Dylan isn't sure. By the way, that's how the congressmen are getting their health insurance. They're offered 6 or 7 different plans, and you take the one you want.
Right.
And they don't get it all for free. 3/4 of it's covered, but they're paying $300, $400, $200 to probably $400 a month apiece for their plan. Maybe it's even $1,000. I don't know. But they're offered. This is exactly what the Obama plan is. We're going to keep the private insurance companies. You take the one you want, the system you like. They're not putting everybody in a government
program. So where is this plan going with Dylan?
Well, the Republicans love his plan in the state. The Democrats, unfortunately, are not fond of it, and the governor isn't. So this whole thing surprised me.
Well, isn't he a Democrat?
Yeah.
He's a Democrat.
Yeah, Dylan is a Democrat. But he and I both ran for the same seat as state.
No, but what do you think of his plan?
It follows what he was doing. I'm telling you what it was. Dylan was the only guy I ever ran against that knew what he was talking about, and he had something to contribute.
So you think it's a good plan?
Obviously, when you got more expenses and your budget is bigger than what you're taking in, you have to cut someplace. And people that are used to getting everything they had before are going to resent giving up something. Something has to give. If I was in the state legislature, I'd say, okay, I'm $2.4 billion short.
Right.
So let's find out where we can take out $2.4 billion. Now, it doesn't mean you take out the same percentage for everything.
Right.
But maybe I can't give $5,000 to every student that wants to go to college. You know, maybe if you can't afford it, you can't go. I don't know. But each thing needs to be studied. But this health care issue is a killer. Listeners, just remember, $12,000 to $17,000, what this plan is talking about, taking people that have the benefit of $16,000 to $17,000 to about $12,000. And those of you that don't have health insurance and can't afford it, or you don't know what it really costs, that's what it costs. That's what this discussion on health care is all about.
Well, thank you, Ned, for going through that analysis. That was an excellent example. And which date is that Free Press for anybody who wants to read that?
You should go on the internet. It was last Sunday's July 26th newspaper.
Okay,
this is an intriguing thing.
It is.
You need to educate yourself on, because what you're hearing from politicians giving, you know, dirty names to processes that have nothing to do with anything.
Okay, well, Ned, thank you for your excellent analysis and joining us here today on WHFR. This is WHFR Dearborn. I am Susan Morell, sitting in today for Jay Cornick. He will be returning to the new WHFR Journal next week, and I'm sure he will tell us all about his vacation. And
he's listening to us on the internet, I'm sure.
I hope so, and I hope we provided some news and views for you that you can use.
Hey, you know, we got a couple of things over here that I didn't know.
Well, we're out of time, unfortunately, Ned, and Highway 61 is coming up, and so we're going to say goodbye for today, and thank you for joining us on the new WHFR Journal.
Okay. You got some music in there?
Join WHFR Radio as we broadcast live on August 7th, 8th, and 9th at Dearborn's Homecoming Festival 2009. The weekend event takes place at Ford Field, just north of Michigan Avenue in downtown Dearborn, and features arts and crafts, carnival rides, food and beverage vendors, free music, fireworks on Saturday and Sunday evening, and so much more. Our WHFR radio broadcast tent will again this year be set up near the carnival rides by the bridge to Ford Field, and our staff will be out meeting listeners and making new friends. Check out our traditional WHFR used CD donation tables, where you can get some really exciting music CDs, formerly in the WHFR library, for only a dollar donation each. WHFR is also proud to be sponsoring the Dearborn Outer Drive Kiwanis Club Turbo Turtle Derby, whereby adopting a rubber turtle to race in the Rouge River.